But they didn't look like they needed any reassurance. The brutes were in no hurry. They took more swigs from water skins, then slowly began spreading out, circling them, putting shields on, laughing with one another as they did. Most of the faces she didn't know, and she didn't want to. They were men from Nadak, and madness was in their eyes, the same sort of madness she'd seen in people during the famine. The Nadak men were starving, but what they hungered for was revenge. Against her. Against anyone. She looked at Devon, the son of Derek, a gifted woodsman. She'd awarded the lad first prize for his calf in the autumn fair 8 years earlier. He had been about 12 then. She still remembered placing the token over his head and how he'd smiled. He hardly showed his teeth because they weren't straight and had a terrible gap. But that day, he couldn't help himself. Rosy cheeks, unabashed teeth, and one arm around his cow's neck. That was how she remembered him. Devon was grinning at her again, showing the same crooked whites, but there was no happiness in his eyes, just anger. "This is close to where the wolves attacked," Wraith said. "The waterfall is to your left, Seth, remember?"
"Yes."
Conagher circled them, shifting until he was in front of Persephone. Hegner's blood dripped down the length of his spear. "Going for the easy kill," she thought. "Such a brave chieftain."
"This isn't personal, Persephone," he told her. "I considered marrying you, but I already have a wife, and Tressa... well, you know Tressa."
Off to the southeast, they heard a bear's distant roar. The sound was chilling in the dark wood. 3 times it thundered. Conagher glanced in the direction of the sound and chuckled.
"I think you're too late."
Then he stopped and focused on Wraith. "Thorgan, get on his left.
Devon, on his right. These other two can wait. He's the problem. Remember, he's fast. We all need to attack at the same time. Just as if he were a bear."
"Not exactly fair of you,"
Malcolm said, holding Reglan's shield up and clutching his spear awkwardly. Persephone didn't know where he found the courage to speak. She was terrified. Glancing at the dead body of Hegner, she wondered what it would feel like when Conagher pushed the sharpened stone point into her.
"Fair,"
Conagher replied, and pointed to the collar around Malcolm's neck.
"Being a slave, I would have thought you'd be past such stupid notions as fair. Would you consider it fair for the bear when the three of you surround it?"
"That's all this is. Killing a dangerous bear. A bear and her 2 cubs.
"Don't hesitate, Seth," Wraith said, as the men spread out. "Remember to whoop like Suri would."
She knew what he meant, and also what the attempt would cost.
"I won't do it."
"They want you, not us," Wraith said.
"He's right," Malcolm told her.
Conagher closed in, clutching his spear tightly. The others took their lead from him and closed the circle around Wraith.
"Now!" Wraith shouted.
His outburst made everyone flinch except Malcolm, who, despite his admission of martial ignorance, stabbed with what Persephone thought was a skillful thrust. Malcolm's spear tip cut the exposed shoulder of a man who screamed and dropped back. Malcolm followed this by running full tilt into Conagher, bowling him over with Reglan's big shield. The hole was opened before her. Dropping both shield and spear, she ran. The weapons would only slow her down. Maybe if she got away, they would leave Wraith and Malcolm alone. It was a hope, anyway. Behind her, men cried out in effort and pain. She heard the crack of wood and another scream. It might have been Wraith, possibly Malcolm, but she couldn't tell and didn't dare look back, didn't dare slow down. Following the moonlit trail, it led to the familiar hollow of fiddlehead ferns and the babbling stream. She splashed through it, praying she wouldn't slip in the muck or catch a loose rock. Water sprayed, splashing her face and blurring her sight. She made it across, found firm footing again, and ran hard. Only a few strides beyond the stream, she heard someone crash through the water.
"Can't get away from me, bitch!" Conniger shouted.
Feet slapped the dirt just behind her. She ran as fast as she could, but even with a shield and spear, Conniger was faster. The rapid beat of his strides closed on her. She could hear his breathing, great puffs of air. She expected to feel the tip of his spear in her back. Instead, she heard him curse, and his feet slide. Perhaps he fell. He hadn't fallen, but Conniger had stopped. They had reached the waterfall. Persephone completely forgot to whoop as she ran off the edge. Trapped against the wall of the cave, Suri panicked. She couldn't think. She couldn't move. The only thing in her head was the apology running over and over. "I'm sorry, Tura. You were right." With her brain locked up, she watched as the huge brown bear lumbered forward. She saw it in perfect detail. Grin ran at her, lunging up and down, forepaws followed by rear. Thick fur undulated, muscles on her shoulders rolled in waves as her claws reached out and scratched grooves into the dirt floor. Her head, which appeared small for her body, was nevertheless massive with its long snout. The bear roared, displaying four fangs, two long ones on top and two smaller ones on the bottom. All four resided in a mouth wide enough to envelop Suri's entire head. She held her breath and pressed against the stone of the cave's rear wall, wondering if the bear would claw, bite, or crush her. Grin must have decided she had no desire to slam into the rocky wall and slowed. That was when a flash of white slammed into the bear.
"Mina!"
Suri shouted in shock. The wolf launched herself onto the hindquarters of Grin and managed to hang on with a mouthful of fur. The bear pivoted sharply, and the wolf lost her tenuous hold. Mina flew across the cave, landed on her side with a cry, but scrambled up again. She lowered her head, raised her fur, planted her paws, and growled at the giant. Grin roared back. Suri came off the wall.
"Run, Mina! Run!"
She knew Mina wouldn't. If the wolf had broken down the door in the lodge and busted through the front gate of the doll to get there, Mina was definitely going to die before abandoning her. At that moment, as the wolf hunched and snarled, Suri knew that her only friend in the world would die. What hadn't occurred to her in the prelude to her own bloody end revealed itself in her desperation to save Mina.
"How'd you do that?"
Tura had asked. The old woman stared as the firelight bathed her features, flickering and dancing with the shadows that played all around their little home. Suri had shrugged.
"I asked the fire spirit to come. Isn't that right?"
Tura had nodded, but the old woman who knew everything had looked confused, apprehensive, even frightened. She hadn't been scared of the fire. The mystic was frightened of Suri. The truth was in the old woman's eyes as they shifted back and forth between Suri and the fire.
Why?
That singular question had lingered with Suri for many years.
If Tura couldn't call the fire spirit without the use of sticks and string, what difference did that make? What was so frightening about making a campfire or lighting a lamp?
It had taken years. It had taken seeing Arion attacked by a goblin. It had taken the look of death in the eyes of Grin as she advanced on Mina. But Suri finally understood. She focused on the bear, briskly rubbed her hands together, and spoke the words of the gods. She clapped as hard as she could. The impact of one palm slapping the other caused Suri to wince. The effect on Grin was far more dramatic. The bear burst into flames. The fire started at her feet, orange and yellow tongues rapidly licking their way up the bear's thick, furry body. Suri heard it, a sound like the single downstroke of a giant bird's wings. She felt it, too. Air sucked from the back of the cave brushed by her as the fire took a breath, grew, and enveloped the beast in a massive plume of brilliant light and blazing heat. Mina jerked away as Grin became a torch. "Mina!" Suri cried. "Over here!" The wolf darted around the flaming bear, which rolled around on the dirt floor. Mina barely cleared the distance. With most of the flames extinguished, Grin let loose a horrible wail. She jerked and raced out of the cave in desperation. Suri caught Mina and hugged the wolf around her furry neck. "Thank you, Mina. Thank you for saving me." Mina pressed her weight against Suri and looked up at her with an, "I am so glad you are all right, but we are definitely going to talk about this later," expression. The wolf wore a belt around its neck, the rest of which trailed on the ground. "Since when do you wear leather?" Then Suri remembered Maeve. All Wraith knew was that Persephone had gotten past the men and into the trees. He and Malcolm had given her the best chance they could. He felt good about that, surprisingly good, as if the accomplishment was the first truly worthwhile thing he'd done in his life. His father would have scowled at his stupidity, but he imagined his mother and sister would have been proud. Having recovered from his bash with Conagher, Malcolm had miraculously returned and pressed his back against Wraiths once more. The former slave and current storyteller extraordinaire was doing well. Wraith had picked up Persephone's dropped spear and thrown it, dropping one man. Then he severed the points off three spears with Shigon's sword and split a shield, scarring the man holding it so badly that he fell and tripped the person behind him. Two spears were thrown. One went over his and Malcolm's heads, the other glanced off his fancy shield from the Derg Rawl. Wraith howled as loudly as he could and scared the lot of them into jumping back. He counted six remaining men, and even though he and Malcolm were just two, the group of men was terrified. Terrified of the God-Killer and his strange friend who dressed like a god.
"Where's Conagher?" one of them called out. "Is he dead?"
The ring of men paused and regrouped. Two went in search of the spears they'd thrown, leaving only four to watch them, none of whom looked happy.
"How you doing?" Wraith asked Malcolm.
"Splendid," the man gasped. "Is bear hunting always this much fun? If so, let's never do it again. They'll probably gang up on you this time." "Lovely. Any advice?"
"Pray."
"Which god?"
"All of them."
Wraith tightened his grip on the Derg shield and Shigon's sword, then looked around for Conagher, but couldn't see him.
"Did you kill Conagher?"
"Just knocked him down," Malcolm replied. "I think he ran away."
The men surrounding them were hesitating longer than Wraith had expected. Several were looking over their shoulders into the trees, probably wondering why Conagher had abandoned them to fight the God-Killer alone.
"Giving us a good long rest," Malcolm whispered.
I like that. But is this normal?
Off in the darkness, near where one who'd overthrown his spear had gone, someone screamed.
Paulton!
Another man called at, and ran in the direction of the noise. A moment later, the snapping of tree branches erupted as the same man came back, sailing through the air as if thrown. He struck a tree to Wraith's left, bounced, and fell to the ground. The thinning circle imprisoning Wraith and Malcolm broke apart as the men lost all interest in them. One man, only a pace away from Wraith, screamed and fell. After that, the rest scattered. In the darkness of the trees around them, Wraith saw nothing. He and Malcolm waited, listening. Snapping branches were followed by screams.
"It's like the forest is eating them,"
Wraith whispered over his shoulder, pushing harder against Malcolm. He peered out into the moon-dappled darkness, unsure what he'd see next. Monstrous trees with gaping mouths. Ravenous beasts. They waited, eyes darting with every crack or snap. Within minutes, the sounds faded, and then vanished. Only the breeze rustling leaves remained. Even the crickets were silent. Wraith and Malcolm remained back to back, holding their weapons up, waiting. Wraith could feel Malcolm breathing and felt him shifting his head left and right.
"You scared?" Malcolm whispered.
"Little bit."
"Me too. Little bit."
Without sound, ghostly figures emerged from the black. The first thing that came to Wraith's mind was ghosts. Ghosts, ghouls, wraiths, or...
"I hope those weren't friends of yours, Godkiller," Nephron said.
As he approached, beams of moonlight splashed across his features, turning Nephron's hair silver. Wraith saw that his sword was out, the metal stained dark. At his side walked Sebek, with Tabor and Nagon gleaming in the moonlight.
"Not friends of ours, no."
Although Wraith was happy not to see carnivorous pines, he wasn't certain if the fray were a better alternative. Seeing them with blades drawn was as disturbing as seeing even a familiar dog with its teeth bared.
"Good,"
Nephron smiled. After wiping his blade, he sheathed it.
"We're in search of the little tattooed one. Do you know where she is?"
"Sorry. Why? What did she do?"
Nephron shrugged.
"I have no idea, but for some reason Arion, the one your slave friend leveled with that rock, insists that we find and protect her. And we tracked the girl this far. I thought she was part of this mess."
He gestured at the dead man who had been thrown. The fray weren't there to kill anyone. Conninger's men had just gotten in the way. Wraith allowed himself to relax a bit, lowering sword and shield.
"We were looking for her too," Wraith said. "We think she's in a cave, up there."
He pointed with Shigon's sword at the moonlit path. Nephron looked and nodded.
"Best be moving then."
The whole group of Frey shifted like a school of fish, and in an instant they were gone.
"Wait!" Wraith shouted. "Did you see Persephone?"
No answer.
"What about Conninger?"
Only silence. Wraith and Malcolm stood alone in the trampled circle in the moonlit glade. They looked at each other, then at the bodies at their feet.
"We're alive,"
Malcolm mentioned in disbelief.
"What about Persephone?"
Wraith began walking around, terrified he would stumble over her body.
"She got away."
Malcolm pointed into the trees.
"I saw her racing into the forest. I think she's fine.
If she got to the Rall, she's safe.
Wraith shook his head. She didn't go to the Rall.
What are you talking about? That's what you told her to do. If I've learned anything about that woman, it's that she's unlikely to do what she's told. You think she went after Suri? That's why we came out here, isn't it?
Wraith started to follow the fray.
But what if she didn't? What if she did go to the Rall? Then she's safe, and we can go look for her with Suri as our guide, right?
Malcolm looked less convinced, but nodded, and followed Wraith into the trees. The water felt as cold as it had the last time. In the dark, Persephone was worried that she wouldn't know which way to swim, but breaching the surface, she kicked toward the sound of the waterfall behind her. Swimming as fast as she could, it didn't take long to reach the edge of the pool. Just when she thought she'd made it to safety, Conniger splashed down. The chieftain was smarter or more determined than Char and his pack of wolves. She dragged herself up on the ledge. Her skirt clung to her legs, and water drizzled a trail as she moved toward the crack behind the falls. Conniger was swimming toward her, and she fought against a panicked urge to run. She knew all too well the dangers of running on slippery stone. Conniger reached the ledge.
How is he so fast?
He didn't know where he was going, yet he still closed the ground between them.
No moonlight fell behind the falls, and none penetrated the inky crevice. She felt with ice-cold fingers along the smooth stone, searching. Her hands became her eyes, and, with outstretched arms, she made her way down the corridor.
The door will open if you press the diamond shape in the design at the top. On the outside, there's no design, just a little rock sticking out a bit. You have to feel around to find it.
Persephone had both hands on the left wall, sliding all over. She hammered frantically on any imperfection that stuck out.
You in here, Persephone?
The sound of Conniger's voice nearly made her scream. She tried to be quiet, tried to hide in the dark, but she couldn't stop breathing.
I can hear you, he said. I can hear your heart pounding. It is pounding, isn't it, Seth? You don't mind if I call you Seth, do you? I noticed the Duraean called you that. Are the two of you lovers? We made up that story about you and him, but maybe we weren't wrong after all. He's dead now. So is the other one.
Where is it? Where is it?
Persephone was sliding her hands everywhere, skidding across the surface.
Where are you, you culling rock?
There's no way out of here, is there, Seth? You might as well give up. I'll make it quick. It's not personal. Honestly, I respect you. I wasn't lying earlier in the lodge. You're sharp as an axe. That's just the problem. I knew you didn't buy the story about a bear killing Reglan. I could see you moving all your men into place. It was only a matter of time before you ordered my death.
You just waited a little too long, that's all.
Given a few more hours, I'd have been the one hiding in the dark, trying to get away from Wraith, Nephron, or maybe that ugly goblin thing. If the situations were reversed, I'm sure you'd kill me quick, right? No sense dragging this out. I swear to Alan and Etten that I'll cut your throat clean and quick. I feel I owe that to Reglan, you know?
Shivering in the dark, she could hear Conniger, feet sliding on the stone as he inched in. He was so close that she heard the water dripping off his clothes. When her toe touched the end of the corridor, she felt her heart sink. She was at the end, in every way a person could be. Chapter 26. Beneath the Falls. That night, there was more than one killer in the forest. The next day, a lot more ghosts. The Book of Brin. Maeve hadn't moved. Suri held Mina as she looked at the rumpled pile of cloth that had been the old woman, her white hair sprayed out in a fan. Suri spotted the finger of a hand, palm up, and a leg's pale skin sticking out from under her dress. She needed to check on her, but was afraid to. Afraid to let go of Mina. Afraid to see what the bear had done. In truth, Suri was just afraid. Her hands were trembling where they clutched Mina's fur. The last time she'd been this scared was after finding Tura face down in the garden. This time was worse. Suri hadn't simply arrived home to a woman who looked as if she'd picked a stupid place to sleep. Suri felt safe holding Mina, or as safe as she could feel. Nothing was as reassuring as hugging a wolf. But she had to check on Maeve. She might still be alive. Not that it would matter. Better if she was dead. Suri couldn't do much for her if she wasn't.
"Wait here,"
she told the wolf, as she rose on uncertain legs. Suri staggered toward Maeve. Along the way she picked up Tura's staff, which helped. Then she knelt beside the old woman. All that white hair obscured her face. Reaching out, Suri brushed it back.
Maeve opened her eyes. Suri jerked her hand back. "I thought you were dead."
The old woman managed a smile, not just with her lips, but with her eyes. Looking up at Suri, she beamed.
"I'm so sorry," Suri said. "It didn't work. I don't know why. I did it right. I know I did. Tura said I was good at such things, and I am, usually. I've always been able to stop the Gulgans from getting in the mushrooms. My wards worked even better than hers."
Maeve struggled to raise a hand. She only got it a few inches off the ground, where it hovered, shaking. Suri reached out and took hold of it.
"It's all right. It's all right,"
Maeve whispered in a thread-thin voice.
"It did work."
Suri didn't understand.
"It did?"
Looking around the cave, she searched for Maeve's daughter. She expected to see a naked baby or maybe a young girl, but only Mina was there. Having never exorcised an evil spirit, Suri had no idea what to expect, what to look for. It was possible she'd missed the moment when Maeve's daughter freed herself. A lot was happening, after all. Maybe the fire did it. That made a lot of sense. The fire could have distracted the demon and forced the girl's soul out, the way the salt should have. The fire's brightness would have made it impossible for Suri to notice the transformation.
But then where is the child?
Suri looked around the cave once more, and found nothing.
"I don't see her," Suri said. "Are you sure it worked?"
Suri felt Maeve's quivering fingers squeezing hers.
"I can see her. She's safe, and she is beautiful. She is so..."
Maeve's fingers stopped quivering. The sight went out of her eyes. But the smile, that giant grin, remained.
Persephone could hear Conigo breathing. He was panting. With nowhere to go, she bent her knees, lowering herself and crouching down. She cowered into a ball, trying to become as small as possible. A child's plan, and as feeble as it was, this one hope was all she had.
Maybe he'll reach out, touch the end of the crack, and think I got away. He might doubt whether I came in here at all.
She didn't even dare to pray, not out loud. In her head, she begged Mira to save her, to hide her, to...
It's really narrow in here, isn't it? How did you find this place?
Persephone covered her face with her hands to muffle her breathing, which was far too rapid and loud. She cursed her body for needing air, and wondered if Conigo could really hear her heart beating. To her own ears, it pounded at an alarming volume.
Did you know there was a pool down here? Or did you just jump and pray? I'll bet you didn't even see the cliff. I'm impressed you didn't scream.
She heard the scrape of his feet as he pressed closer, and probably could have touched him if she extended her arm.
You don't have that spear with you, do you, Saf? No, you dropped that. Lucky for me. Otherwise this...
Splash! The sound came from outside. It's Wraith.
Somehow he had managed to escape and had come for her. Only one splash meant Malcolm was injured, or dead, or maybe they had split up and he had gone to save Suri. What mattered was that Wraith was there, and he was going to save her.
Conigo stopped moving. Thorgan! Devon! Conigo shouted.
He was right next to her, and his voice was so loud that she jerked in terror.
That you?
It has to be, Wraith. It has to be. It has to be. Persephone wanted to cry out, wanted to scream his name, but Conigo was so close. She had to wait, had to squeeze herself into the floor, to hide, to give Wraith time.
More splashing, and it was getting closer.
Who is it?
Conigo asked, his voice less confident.
Who's out there?
Still no answer came. If it's Wraith, why doesn't he say so?
She heard Conigo shift, heard him take a step away, and then another.
Who are you?
The small patch of light that marked the opening of the crack vanished, as something big blocked it out.
Who in Alan's name are you?
Conigo cried. The answering roar shook the stone. Wraith and Malcolm moved as fast as they could, but had no hope of keeping up with the fray as they darted like deer through the trees. Their speed and silence, especially in the dark, was amazing, and more than a little frightening. Wraith and Malcolm were left far behind, and in awe.
Maybe they aren't gods, but they have to be magical. Some form of Crimble, perhaps.
By the time Wraith and Malcolm reached the cave, Maeve was dead, and the Frey were building a litter to carry her body back to the doll. There wasn't a bear, living or dead, and Wraith assumed it had been driven off. Suri was alive. The young mystic crouched on her knees beside the Keeper of Ways, with Mina curled beside her. There was no sign of Persephone. Wraith had been certain she would come there, forgoing the Rawl and trying to save Maeve and Suri on her own. A bloom of panic ignited as he began to doubt he would ever see her again.
No, he thought. I'm being foolish. He tried to convince himself that she had taken his hint and run for the Rawl. He wanted to believe she'd locked herself inside and was safe, waiting for them to find her. But as sensible as all that seemed, it was too good to be true. Nothing in his life had ever gone completely his way, and the gods still had their eyes on him. They always wanted blood. Maeve was dead, but one old woman wouldn't be enough to sate the appetite of gods. "Suri," he said. The girl turned her head and looked up slowly, her eyes taking time to focus. "Can you show me how to find that waterfall?" "The one with the Derg Roll hidden beneath it," Malcolm added. Suri nodded, then glanced back at Maeve, still with her baffled expression. "Can you do it in the dark? Can you do it now?" Wraith asked. Suri glanced back at Maeve once more, then stood up. "Not a good idea to go there now."
"Why?" Malcolm asked.
"Grin will probably go there."
"The bear?"
Wraith said it so loudly that the Frey looked over.
"Why would Grin go there?"
"She likes caves to hide in when she's scared or hurt. We've taken hers, so she'll go there. I've seen her do it before."
"Scared? Hurt? Suri, did you do something to Grin?"
Malcolm asked. She nodded. "She was going to hurt Mina. I had to do something. That waterfall and pool is the nearest source of water, and she'll want to soothe the burns. If she lives, she's going to be in a really bad mood. Best to stay away."
In his head, Wraith heard laughter. The laughter of the gods. The sound made his skin crawl. He had chosen poorly, and put Persephone right in the path of the bear, which, for reasons only Suri knew, was going to be in an enraged state. What made the situation so ironic was that the gods had known all along what Wraith had only just realized. How much he cared for Persephone. She might not be able to love him, but oddly enough, that didn't matter. Some things didn't make sense. Some things were merely the whim of gods. Gods who had a recent and irresistible infatuation with him. In his mind, a great brown bear's image flashed, rearing over Persephone, its massive claws spread and its jaws open wide.
"Persephone is there!" Wraith shouted. "You need to take us now!"
"We'll all go," Nephron said,
surprising Wraith.
"Medak, Vorath, and Ares, pack up the old rune, and we'll meet you at the forest edge when we get back. Everyone else,"
he looked at Suri,
"follow the girl."
Suri glanced one last time at Maeve, and then, together with Mina, trotted towards the cave exit. As they headed out, Wraith heard Sebek speaking to Nephron in Frey.
"Did he say what I think he said?"
Nephron nodded.
"They found a Derg Roll."
Persephone smelled the harsh odor of burnt hair as Conniger stepped on her hand in his frantic retreat. She couldn't help crying out in pain.
Conniger didn't notice. His priorities had changed. Finding Persephone no longer topped his list. Even when she pushed his foot away, he didn't seem to care.
Persephone lost her fear and got to her feet, shoving Conniger back.
Another roar sounded. The sound amplified by the stone walls was heart-stopping.
The bear couldn't be more than one or two arm lengths away, but Persephone couldn't see anything in the darkness. She felt Conniger grabbing at her blindly with both hands.
"He doesn't have a spear."
The chieftain grabbed hold of Persephone and tried pulling her around in front of him, but the crevice was too narrow. That far back, it was just a few feet wide, and she was determined to keep Conniger between her and the bear. She wrenched free of his grip and beat him with her fists and knees. In the blackness, she connected with some part of his face, something hard and bony. She heard a squish,
his mouth, or maybe his nose. Conniger groaned in pain, and Persephone kept swinging, swinging in the dark. Then she pushed out with both hands and managed to raise one foot and kick. Conniger was hit hard. He staggered backward, stumbling away. Then he screamed. At the same time, she heard what sounded like the cracking of branches. Persephone felt the movement of air and the wetness spray her face. A cool wave followed by a hot, moist puff. Conniger continued to scream, his voice rising higher in pitch and intensity with each crack and snap. Persephone's hands were back on the wall where the door was supposed to be. She ran her fingers across the surface, clawing in desperation. "Where are you?" she screamed aloud at the stone. "You have to feel around to find it, and it's too high for the pack to reach." She stretched up, sliding her palms left and right, manically waving both arms. The stone was smooth, slick, and moist. "Blood. It's splattered with blood.
Help!"
Conniger cried, not sounding at all like himself, not even sounding human. The high-pitched screech was something a small animal might make, and was accompanied by a deep growl that she felt as much as heard. Persephone's hand crossed a bump she'd missed before, and she slammed her fist against it, more in a physical expression of panic than any hope of success. She was rewarded with the green light's glow, a sliver that widened with the low grind of stone on stone. She fell inside the roll, hitting her knees on the hard floor. The pain streaked up her body, making her cry out again. She sucked in a harsh breath, her eyes watering. Behind her, the bear continued killing Conniger. No, not killing. Not anymore. She heard another snap, but no cry, no screech. Conniger was dead. The bear was ripping what was left of him apart.
"I'm next," she thought.
Gritting her teeth and opening her eyes, Persephone pushed off the floor. She was back in the little room with the glowing green stone, square columns and ribbed archways.
"I have to close the door."
Built by the diminutive Derg, the doorway wasn't large. She had no trouble reaching the diamond at the top of the threshold. She pressed the stone plate. It moved easily enough, and the door obediently began to close, the stone slab sliding left to right with a steady grind.
"Hadn't it slammed shut before?"
Watching the massive stone scrape its way shut, Persephone was certain it had closed faster the last time.
"Close, damn you, close!"
Illuminated by the eerie green glow spilling out of the doorway, a vision of horror emerged. The bear had the better part of Conniger in its jaws and was shaking him, spraying his blood across the walls of the crevice. The animal's fur looked strange. Not like fur at all, but rather charred skin. It wasn't a bear. It couldn't be. She finally saw its true form. Surrey and Conniger had been right. The brown was a demon. The bear's shining eyes saw her, and with remarkable speed the beast lunged. The door was almost shut, but the bear shoved its head through the opening and caught the stone with a paw. Whatever force was driving the stone stopped. The bear roared again as it struggled to claw its way in, back legs scratching, struggling to catch on the opening, trying to pry it wider. Persephone had no idea what force caused the door to open and close along its track, but she prayed it had the power to crush the bear, to kill it. Whether the bear wanted in or out no longer mattered. The stone was around its throat, and the beast was caught. It pressed forward and jerked back in frustration. With one paw still hooked, its claws gripped the edge of the door. Four dark claws as long and thick as fingers, dripped blood, pieces of flesh trapped under each. The bear roared in anger, and with an effort pushed its paw against the door. Persephone watched in horror as the stone slab inched back. With another grunt, the bear pushed again. The stone gave another inch, the gap growing wider. Soon the bear would be able to catch the edge of the door with its back claws and heave it wide. Inside the room, and to the right of the door, lay Wraith's old shield, the same one she'd used when fighting the wolves. Persephone picked it up and, just as before, used both hands to thrust the bottom edge at the brown's snout. The animal wailed and growled. She hit the beast again and again, as hard as she could. The bear's face turned bloody. The brown jerked backward. In a panic to escape the blows, the bear withdrew the paw that had clutched the edge of the door. With its removal, the stone slab resumed its left-to-right march, closing once again. The gap remained too small for the bear to pull its head out. Trapped, the brown twisted and jerked violently, but the door continued to close, pinching around its neck. Again, Persephone bashed at the animal's face in the vain hope of somehow forcing it out. The bear wailed in desperation, fear, and anger. As the door slid, the bear's roar became a whimper. Tighter and tighter the stone inched, squeezing the animal's throat. The brown jerked harshly, still struggling to wrench its head free. Then the animal succumbed to panic. Ignoring all pain, it bucked and twitched, shrieking in such terror that Persephone took a step back. Slowly, very slowly, the bear lost its strength. Persephone watched its face, its bloodied nostrils and eyes, as the brown grew silent and still. Persephone continued to stand before it, holding the shield and rocking with the pounding of her heart. After several minutes, with no movement from the bear's head, she finally allowed herself to sit down. She sat right before the door, in front of the massive head of the bear, whose eyes remained open. Two small black globes, like polished pebbles, reflected the green light. Persephone felt her breathing hitch. She still held tight to the shield, and wrapping her arms around it, she began to cry. At first, the tears came from the aftermath of fear, the sort of mortal terror she hadn't known before, which left her exhausted and stripped of dignity and pride. Yet that was only the beginning. In her weakened, exposed state, the dam burst. She relived the deaths of Marn and Reglan, followed by her two younger children. She thought about Arya and her mangled son, Gifford, who somehow had survived against all odds. She imagined the death of Wraith and Malcolm, Maeve and Suri. She cried for all of them, and for the innocence of Nadak and Durea. Crouching on the floor, in the eerie green light, she wept until she had no more tears. Then she lay down with her cheek against the stone. Closing her eyes, she tried to remember how to breathe, how to think, and how to live. Somewhere in that process, exhaustion overtook her, and she fell asleep. They found her in the Rall, covered in blood, holding Wraith's old shield. The dead bear was in the door, Conniger's remains just outside. They identified him by the copper boss of the shield floating in the pool. Conniger's spear was there too, lost in the fall. He hadn't expected to fight a bear. Wraith was the first one into the Rall.
with Malcolm, Suri, and Nephron close behind. He stood over Persephone, feeling his strength run out. He knew they would be too late the moment Suri told them about the bear's intentions. Doraeans weren't used to happy endings. That was one of the reasons he'd always enjoyed his sister's tales. They gave him hope, but they were just stories. Reality always turned out differently. He stood over Persephone's crumpled body, vainly clutching the shield he'd left, and found himself wishing that he'd been her shield. That he could have been there, even if it meant dying alongside her. Strange how I never appreciate anything until after it's gone. My family, my father, Dorea, her. Slowly, gently, he bent down. I'm sorry I wasn't here, he said, and kissed her on the forehead, surprised at how warm she still felt. Usually the... She woke with a jerk and pulled back, disoriented and frightened until she saw them. Wraith? Persephone said groggily. Wraith sucked in a sharp, stunned breath. Are you all right? He asked, shocked. An immense and uncontrollable grin stretched across his face. Persephone hesitated and looked out at the bear still lying in the open doorway. Slowly she nodded. Yes. Yes, I think so. And you're all right, too. Her eyes brightened. Then she hugged him. Arms tight around his neck, she squeezed, but only briefly. Conniger said... But I guess he lied. Spotting Suri, she pulled back and exclaimed, You're alive! You have black hair, the mystic replied, then looked at the dead bear. But I'm not in the mood for games just now. I wasn't playing, I... Persephone stopped and looked around the roar. What about Maeve? Where is she? Faces darkened. Suri's most of all. Maeve died. Grin. Suri continued to stare at the body of the bear lying outside the open door. I don't think Grin was a demon. She was just a bear. Maeve fought the brown. Fought the bear for me, I think. Maeve fought the brown? Persephone asked, stunned. With Tura's staff? Suri held up the stick. She was fierce. Suri petted the wolf. So was Mina. How long have you known of this place? Nephron asked as the other Galantians filed into the roll and walked around the stone pillars, looking at the walls in fascination. We just learned of it, Persephone said. Suri showed us. The Galantian leader turned to eye the mystic. The tattooed one? He asked. Is this it? Sebek asked him, pointing at the runes that circled the walls. Striker! Nephron called, and the goblin entered from where he had waited in the crevice. Vochon hes? Nephron asked, in an unpleasant language that sounded as if he were coughing up something to spit. Stryker drew back his hood, revealing a monstrous face and head. He gazed up at the writing. The creature, which was how Wraith thought of Stryker, for he was too repulsive to be thought of as a person, shambled slowly around the room. The goblin raised a hand at the runes and pointed with its claws. Etomha! The goblin replied to Nephron, and nodded. The Frey smiled. Wraith extended his hand to Persephone. It's nearly morning. I think it's time we took you home. Chapter 27 When Gods Collide. I could not move, not my arms, my legs, or even my head. I was forced to watch, and I was not even allowed to scream.
The Book of Brin. They exited the forest in a solemn procession by the first light of dawn. Persephone, Wraith, Malcolm and Suri followed behind the Frey, who carried the shattered bones of Maeve. Hours before, Persephone had found the black spear of Marth, right where she'd dropped it, within sight of the Glade battlefield. The weapon lay among the men's bodies. She was grateful Wraith and Malcolm were safe, but couldn't find any cheer in her heart for the victory. Many of the dead had lived in Wren all their lives. She knew their parents, families, and friends, and not even her own safety could lighten that weight. Persephone's feet and skirt were soaked with morning dew as she struggled to march through the tall grass. An overwhelming exhaustion extended beyond muscle and bone, even beyond the aftermath of the battle with a giant bear. She felt empty, truly empty, to the point of being erased. With the death of Conniger and the bear, a portion of her life had reached a conclusion. Her memory of Reglan remained mortally wounded. Discovering that he'd had a child with Maeve was a shock. But his order to kill a baby and hide the affair for years was beyond her ability to forgive. Persephone had drawn strength from Reglan when he was alive, and from his memory after his death. That morning she could no longer lean on him, and she wasn't certain where she found the strength to keep walking. Suri matched her in expression as she stared out at the rising sun. She held something tightly in her hand and repeatedly looked at it with increasing concern.
"What's that you've got?" Persephone asked.
"A bone," Suri said.
A month ago such a reply might have surprised Persephone, but that morning Suri could have admitted to holding the beating heart of the Tetlin witch, and Persephone wouldn't have blinked.
"Corin was coming to kill everyone."
"That's why you went after the bear? Because you thought it was coming to attack the doll?"
Suri nodded.
"The bone told me Grin would attack this morning."
"Looks like Magda was right. We did what she said, and Grin has been killed."
Suri didn't look convinced.
"What?" "The signs I saw indicated something that... something bigger. Grin was a bear with a hunger for human flesh, but still just a bear."
"Maybe you just read them wrong. Saw more danger than there really was."
"What do you think, Mina?"
Suri asked the wolf. The wolf panted alongside her with saliva dripping off her tongue.
"Mina is not so sure,"
Suri said. "And Mina is a very smart wolf, maybe the wisest in the world." The light rising from behind the jagged teeth of the forest turned the sky purple and orange and shone on the walls of Dol Ren. Persephone made out the banners flapping above the lodge roof. She slowed, then stopped altogether. She glanced at Suri and her eyes narrowed.
What if Suri didn't read the signs wrong? What if the wolf is right?
"What's wrong?" Wraith asked, after noticing she was several steps behind the rest.
"No horn," she replied.
"Is that unusual?" Malcolm asked.
"It's just us, after all, and it's early."
"No men on the ramparts, either."
Circling, they found the gate open, both doors flung wide, too wide. Usually only Delwyn and Gelston left early, and they had a habit of opening only the left side because the doors were heavy, and the right one always stuck. Also, the gate doors had been thrown inward rather than pushed out. No one pulled the massive doors open from the inside. They were easier to push.